This ROFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to Just Rugby NZ, where we'll talk about anything as long as it's rugby. I'm Grant Harding, and with me to talk is Rugby News magazine editor Campbell Burns. To be sure. The All Blacks stood shoulder to shoulder with the world's number one ranked team, Ireland, and came away with a deserved 23-13 victory, ending the home team's 19-test winning streak in Dublin. It may not have been pretty, but that was as much to do with Ireland's tactics at the breakdown as anything, because the All Blacks, even with a yellow card, which cost them 10 points at a delicate time of the match, never lost composure. Campbell, your thoughts?
Well, yes, Grant, I'd have to say that was a very significant victory for the All Blacks, and they certainly went flawless, particularly that first half. As you mentioned, with Ireland, they slowed down ruck ball, not entirely legally, often I would have to say, but they kept their composure. Their bench came on again and made a good impact, and they finished well on top of Ireland. So the big surprise for me was how poor Ireland was, particularly on attack, just not really firing shots. They were staunch on defence and strong at the breakdown early, but really they didn't perform like the number one side in the world that we would come to expect. So the All Blacks, without even perhaps hitting top gear and relying on Damien McKenzie's boot, just had enough wherewithal to come through for that victory. So that was a very important, significant win for the All Blacks, to win ugly and win a real grind like that was important.
Yeah, very significant victory. Look, two tests in a row now where the opposition have had to do the majority of the tackling. Why, I wonder? I mean, I think it is the emergence of better ball carrying involving fewer errors, and some of the players involved in that are also emerging. Wallace Satiti, Asafa Amua, Tamaiti Williams, to name three relatively inexperienced players making strides on this tour. The bench, operational, with players making a difference on arrival. Tossie, another ball carrier. Tuonga Fasi, scrummaging power. Tua Pilotu has been immense. And Roygaard, you know, he's been razor sharp. Discipline has also improved. Is that your feeling?
Well, yes, certainly the discipline was much better. It was Ireland who was under the gun from Nick Berry, the Australian referee. So that was a step forward there. But also we talked about the importance of Damien McKenzie controlling the game much better, and that was certainly the case on the weekend. It wasn't just his kicking off the tee. Once again, he wasn't flawless like the rest of the team. There was a couple of dusty moments on defence, but generally speaking, he ran the cutter with much more authority than we've seen. So that was important, and yet conversely, Ireland, we saw when I think Frawley came on, he had some handling issues, and Crowley, although he kicked his goals, couldn't really dictate the tactics like the All Blacks were able to. So that was probably one of the more pleasing aspects. But the All Blacks go quite direct in the forwards. They did score their try, obviously playing more expansively, but with good handling and good patience, and so they just looked more likely in the face of that Ireland defence to break it down. So, yeah, look, overall, pretty pleasing. And I would say Damien McKenzie has probably played his way back into that number 10 jersey for the France game, because Barrett wasn't that great against England. So, you know, we have to give McKenzie credit. He's been up and down a bit this year, but he performed under pressure when it counted.
Yeah, there was just a couple of moments, wasn't there? He failed to put Talia away in the first half after he'd got a lovely gap, and didn't really sense Jamison Gibson-Park on his tail, and that opportunity went begging, and there was the odd little kick here and there, but very good performance from him. He was a player under a lot of pressure, replacing Beauden Barrett, but another player under a lot of pressure, of course, was Asafa Amua. There was a huge amount of pressure, a lot of talk about his line-out throwing. Yes, he missed an attacking line-out throw, which was, you know, an important miss, but his dominant tackles and his play around the field, including the last pass for Will Jordan's crucial try, that was top class.
Well, it was. I mean, this was this was his breakout moment, his breakout test. He was under pressure last week, but he got through, I think, 79 minutes on the weekend. And other than that one line-out throw, one attacking line-out throw that he missed, he was very good at that facet. He was accurate and he was dynamic around the field, tackled well. So a tremendous performance, really. I suspect Cody Taylor will come back in the number two jersey, but now we can perhaps say that Asafo Almoa, after many years of promise, but perhaps with not nailing that that core task at line-out time, is now the real deal and as an All Black. And just in the space of the week, you go from feeling, feeling, I guess, a lack of confidence when he was throwing him, particularly throwing long, to now to the point where he just simplified it, got it right. And so we can say, hey, moving forward, that will give him a huge shot of confidence.
Yeah, and no problem, Cody Taylor coming back in. That's just building the depth within the squad, isn't it? I mean, that's just giving you two players who are going to give you impact. Look, the breakdowns were a nightmare. And quite honestly, being of the five law persuasion myself, you try not to throw the ball forward, don't kick your opponents. And I've forgotten the other three laws. I would have no chance of telling you whether Ireland's tactics were legal or illegal. But they certainly upset any chance of the All Blacks gaining an attacking rhythm in the first half.
Well, that's right. I mean, they did have a very good loose trio, well-balanced loose trio, Ireland. And Josh van der Flier, he scored their try. We know he's good over the ball. But he was right in there slowing the All Blacks ball down. So that's why it was very stop-start most of that first half. The All Blacks couldn't get their attacking rhythm going. But what I liked was that they maintained a bit of composure there and they were able to just gradually break Ireland down. And whether Nick Berry wasn't quite ruling correctly there, but of course the All Blacks did have the better of the penalty count. So, yeah, it was a bit of a mess there at the breakdown, but the All Blacks managed to actually see through that and weather that storm. So I guess that was the pleasing thing, because we knew Ireland would come hard at the breakdown. Van der Flier has a bit of history in that regard, strong jackler, strong tackler. And, it was messy. It was certainly wasn't fluent rugby, but that was, they managed to find a way.
Boxing out players is being strictly ruled on this weekend in all the matches. Nick Berry picked it up a few times. We saw that one from the kickoff even, where Tupou Vaiai was a bit lazy getting back and got in front of the player receiving the ball and was immediately penalised, straight after half time. It was a very delicate time. But I have no problem with this new ruling, because it allows a contest for the ball in the air.
Well, that's right. Although, to be fair, I mean, I guess it was the hot topic du jour for the referees, so they were going to be ruling on that. I mean, I'm not sure whether they got it right all the time. Some of it, there were just guys who were running a straight line. I mean, why do they have to get out of the way for a chaser, as long as they don't step into the line? I think it's good. It's a good in general that they're ruling on that, because we know there is a lot of obstruction and a lot of cynicism at the top end of international rugby. But, I think in general it was the right way to rule it, but I'm not sure whether they got it right all the time.
Well, as you said, Ireland, well below their normal standard. The yellow card for Geordie Barrett sort of let them back in there. They kicked a penalty goal just before half time to go to 9-6 down. The boxing out that I just mentioned allowed them to go to a line out, which New Zealand stole, forced in goal. Then there was a scrum try that followed, and we almost exacerbated that by a bit of silliness from McKenzie and Jordan at the back after James Lowe had found a good touch from the kickoff. But other than that, really, Ireland were very inaccurate there, and their ball skills were poor.
Yeah, which is strange, because that hasn't been the case in the last few years. But I don't know. I just think they, this is a side that hasn't played in 4 months. They'd been supposedly training the house down in Portugal, but just coming in, they didn't have those connections. Even Bundy Aki was dropping the ball. But yeah, just that accuracy and that clinical nature that we've come to expect. I think they, perhaps they got caught up with a bit of the off-field stuff and listening to Rob Carney, who said, the All Blacks, no one fears the All Blacks anymore. I think Brian O'Driscoll weighed in on this as well. So really, they had to, with all that swirling around, they had to front with a performance that was more Ireland-like, as we've seen against the All Blacks in the past few years. And it was a long way from that. And it was curious as to why that was, because, that they had just about the same 15 as we saw in that World Cup. To take out Sexton, and obviously Tadhg Furlong was a loss to injury for them. But it was pretty settled, and they brought a lot of experience off the bench. So whether that's a coaching issue and Andy Farrell got things wrong there, or whether it was just the players just not quite on it with their accuracy, which the All Blacks have suffered from for much of the year, to be fair. So, yeah, that was a mystifying performance from Ireland, and I'm not sure what that does to the world rankings. With South Africa winning, do they now go back top, do they?
Well, I don't know, but yeah, I would imagine they would. But, you know, it was mystifying because even their bench didn't fire. Not, you know, players came on and continued to make mistakes. Anyway, Ireland, they are now in the rear vision mirror, left with the horror visions of Rico Ioane leading both the haka and the post-match social media charge. Yeah, it is now France we turn our attention to. They warmed up for next weekend's clash against the All Blacks with a 52-12 win over Japan. No surprise there. An Olympic gold medalist Anton DuPont made a seamless return to international 15s as captain. No surprise there either. France might be ranked lower than Ireland, but I'm expecting a more thorough examination of the All Blacks' qualities this weekend. France have beaten the All Blacks the last two times they've met, both times in Paris, most recent at last year's Rugby World Cup. But interestingly, the All Blacks 23 this coming weekend will only feature at the most 11 survivors of that clash.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because last year the All Blacks didn't play particularly well in that second half of the opening game, and they lost their first ever pool match at a Rugby World Cup. We know what happened after that. Antoine Dupont was injured, and that was a key factor in the World Cup because he came back under a bit of an injury cloud, and then they narrowly lost their quarterfinals. So which France side will turn up? They've been a bit spotty throughout the season. They did put away Japan, as you say, 52-12 last week. I note they had Thomas Ramos at 10, so with Mathieu Jalibert off the bench. So Romain Ntamack, where is he? Is he injured at the moment? How much will that affect what they do? Because Ramos is more of a kicker, whereas Ntamack's more of a runner, as Jalibert. He likes to move the ball. So France, with a very big pack, they'll try and bludgeon us up front. But again, it will definitely come down to how much impact DuPont can have. He was very influential on the weekend, scored a try, certainly set up a couple. So imagine him up against someone like Cam Roger. That will be a mouthwatering matchup.
Well, yeah, I hope that is the case. Look, the All Blacks will be sweating on the fitness of Cody Taylor and Beauden Barrett still. They'll be finishing their HIA protocols later in the week. And they'll want them fit. You know, even though, as you've said, Amour and McKenzie went well, as it adds to the 23-man squad depth. Sam Kane also doubtful with a major head laceration, receiving 8 stitches following the game against Ireland, and the possibility that he may have to go through HIA protocols. What to do, Campbell? Because I think Roygaard and Tua Peloto are also due a start.
They are, and I would certainly start both of them. Tua Peloto, very heavy ball carrier through the middle, so I'd be starting him in the middle of that All Blacks pack. Sam Kane, well, he's had 8 stitches, but unless he has actually had a concussion, I think he should be right. So, you know, he's tough as old boots. He can just slap on some headgear and he'll be right, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Unless there's actually a concussion issue with him, I think he should be able to play, perhaps with some precautions around, as I say, headgear to protect him. Otherwise, they will have to likely move Savia into 7, Satiti 8 and Samapeni Finau to 6, which wouldn't be a bad thing. That's they'd bring in a good line-out option on the blind side there in Finau. So that will be remains to be seen because there's still talk about Blackadder and Papali'i, but if they're still in New Zealand, it's very late in the piece for them to be flying across and even taking their place on the bench for one or two games. So it just seems they'll have to work with what they've got. They've got Peter Luckey in there. I suspect if Kane's ruled out, he'll have to come onto the bench. But I would still expect Kane to play.
Yeah, yeah, okay, that's a fair call. But and you've given the alternative if he doesn't, Satiti at 8, Savia at 7, and Finau at 6 with Peter Luckey on the bench. And yes, I believe that Robertson was non-committal about Papali'i and Blackadder at the press conference over in Dublin on Sunday. So they obviously must be running out of time to get over there. Now, I think they'd be better off bringing in a Karifi or if they want to boost their squad at this stage.
For sure.
And they're also bringing in a lock, of course, because Sam Darry has pulled up with a knee injury at training and headed home. So the match will be controlled by Georgian referee Nika Amashukili and kicks off at 9:10 a.m. on Sunday morning. The All Blacks 15 completed their two-match tour undefeated with a 31-13 victory over Georgia in Montpellier in France this morning to follow their victory over Munster last week. And in Campbell, I've been impressed by this group led by coach Clayton McMillan and captain Duplessis Kariffi. They lost five players to the All Blacks, an injury before the tour started, and further key players to the All Blacks this week, especially Harry Plummer, AJ Lamb and Ruben Love. But they've taken on a Rugby World Cup nation and they've dented them where it hurts. Four of their five tries coming from line-out drives.
Well, they have. I mean, they would certainly take 31-13 over Georgia and to go with the win over Munster as well, and particularly with injuries and players coming up and down. I mean, it was a bit of a scrappy match on Monday morning in Montpellier there. The pitch looked terrible, it's fair to say. There was mud and it was cutting up, although there was a decent crowd. Mm. But, I mean, some of these players certainly put their hands up. Duplessis Kariffi, man of the match against Georgia. So he would be next in line if they were bringing someone up in the loose forwards. Kurt Eklund scored a couple of tries from line-out drives, played well. Josh Jacom and Finlay Christie in the halves did their chances no harm. Naitoa Akoi, who would possibly be the next cab off the rank at lock, did well too. So a lot of these players putting their hands up and just saying, hey, you know, we're still around. So I think they'd be very careful about who they're picking, because the rest will be flying home and there's no way they'll be flying back. So they may still keep a couple of players in the All Blacks now, but I think this side has done well, served its purpose. They've given their short time together, their connections have looked pretty solid, and some, you know, I think you'd have to take your hat off, given jet lag was a factor last week, and All Blacks selections and moving in and about. So Clayton McMillan, well done with this team.
Yeah, Kariffi and Clayton McMillan, you know, big applause for them. They really led this team well. And, I thought Akoi, yeah, he's been outstanding. Walker Leawiri and Holland all did well in that middle row. Kariffi, and I don't think there was a player on that tour who did himself any harm. And as you say, you know, they're just that little bit higher in the pecking order going into 2025. 18,000 people at that match. That wasn't too bad. Now, look, you've been hard at work again on another rugby news. What have you got for us this month?
Yeah, so the November Rugby News is out today. Oh, sorry. In fact, it's out this week. So we've got Sam Kane on the cover, the rugby warrior bowing out. An exclusive interview with Sam. That was prior to the Northern Tour kicking off. A couple of other good features in there. An NPC on-field review, talking about how it was such fun, unpredictable viewing this year. There's a feature on Akira Iwani, the enigma, who's departing New Zealand rugby, sadly, without perhaps fulfilling his potential. Sarah Hirani, back in the Black Ferns Sevens. You know, this is a woman who's won everything in the game, but she's still motivated to continue. So Ricky Swinnell's done a piece there. And we've had a look at the Crusaders in Canterbury rugby. Was their season a bit of a blip, or are they in decline? Even though Canterbury made the semis of the NPC, they were up and down like yo-yos. And, of course, the Crusaders missed the playoffs. So we've done a bit of a report and sort of investigating where things are at with Crusaders and Canterbury Rugby. So that's out this week, $12.50 on the stands, or you can subscribe through 0800 77 7710.
Sounds like a lot of good reading to me. And, you know, Sam Kane, you know, what a career he's had, and to come back this year. You would never have thought he was going to get through so much rugby for the All Blacks this year. But, yep, great stuff. Look, you're listening to Just Rugby NZ with Grant Harding and Rugby News magazine editor Campbell Burns. Test rugby in the autumn series is in full swing, and what a set of results we saw. The All Blacks' final tour opponent, Italy, hammered 50-18 by Argentina, who scored seven tries. The Wallabies got up in sensational fashion in overtime to beat England 42-37, probably the game of the weekend. Fiji inflicted Wales' 10th straight defeat this morning, 24-19, and South Africa got past Scotland 32-15, having led 19-9 at halftime, 19-9, four tries to nil. Campbell, you were on the money last week on two counts in regards to these matches. You said Fiji would be a different proposition from the team who surrendered to Scotland last week, and that the England-Australia clash would be the most intriguing of the weekend, other than the All Blacks and Cyprus. What a match. Five tries apiece. Max Strogerson's try in the 83rd minute, giving Australia their first win at Twickenham since the 2015 Rugby World Cup.
Yeah, it was just crazy. I mean, they certainly would have been the underdogs going in Australia, having won just one game in the Rugby Championship, but they hung tough there. I mean, England at various stages looked to be on top, particularly starting out. I think they had there was a brace there to Chandler Cunningham himself, but they managed to just stay in there, and they got good purchase out of their midfield, Len Ikitau, and the debutant Joseph Suaalii, who didn't do a whole lot, but everything he did was good. He's very strong aerially. Yeah. I haven't seen a lot of this kid because I haven't got time to watch rugby league with all the other rugby going on, but he's come in. We didn't know what position he was going to be, and they throw him straight into centre, and he's just had a very good debut. A lot of nice touches, set up the first try, good in the air, made his tackles. That was a very, very promising debut. I guess for his price tag, they would have been expecting something like that, but he at least performed. So that was a major plus for them. But they also got good performances out of men like Tom Wright from the back, strong on the counter-attack. Bobby Valentini, the John Eales medalist, good again at number six. Angus Bell carrying through the middle of the ruck, the loosehead prop. So a lot of these guys stood up. So they were always sort of in the game. And then that remarkable last 5 minutes where they looked to have the game, then they looked to have lost it, and then winning it again. Just remarkable. And now Australia's in the crazy position of facing Wales this weekend, and they should be able to win that.
Yep.
They could beat Scotland, and so they may be sitting on a grand slam as they head into their final game against Ireland. Now, the chances are, I just didn't give the Wallabies any chance of getting close to a grand slam, but they are now right in that picture to emulate that great side of 1984.
Well, if they play as they did against England, they certainly are. But, you know, I think you've gone through that nicely, because Joe Smith is finding some pieces of the puzzle, Campbell. I mean, you know, Suaalii, yes, you know, great debut. He was an Australian schoolboy, just quickly for the listeners, that he was an Australian schoolboy player, went to league, played NRL for the Roosters. He's still only 21. He got sent off in the first State of Origin this year, and he played for the Roosters. I think they made it to the semi-finals of the NRL. So, you know, he's a good player. He's been identified as a real pro, great with his prep, apparently. But Len Ikitau had an outstanding game alongside him, which would have helped him no end. But, yeah, Joe Smith, he's building something here.
Well, he is, and this is where, you know, you just had to be a bit patient, because you could see it. He didn't have the cattle necessary to work with earlier in the season, but he's getting some of the chess pieces in the right place. He's brought in Tane Edmead off the back of an NPC season. We still don't know for sure who his number 10 is, but he's getting players to perform when he slots them in there. He's got a pretty rugged forward pack now. You know, he's led by Harry Wilson at number 8, who's good value. We know Fraser McWright is a really good footballer. So that loose trio they've got at the moment with Valentini at 6 seems to be working really well. Yep. And to close out a game like that and show that sort of composure when we know they had a meltdown in the second half against the Pumas only 6 or 7 weeks ago, that showed a bit of mettle, and that's just Schmidt having to sort of implore the Australian rugby public to be a bit patient, because he's doing good things with the side, as Dave Rennie did only a couple of years ago before he was prematurely discarded. Yeah. So I think there's some real promise for Australia, and now they if they play close to that, as you say, they should be good enough to deal to Wales, who are now at very much a low ebb.
Well, yeah, I mean, England will be kicking themselves for some of their play later in the game. The back move, which went wrong, and Callaway scooted away to get the Aussies back in the lead at 35-30. And then Itoje, after scoring, dropping the kick. But then Ikitau being allowed to get on the outside there. But, fair play to Australia. Great to see them pulling off a victory like that. Warren Gatland's Wales, oh dear. 400 days without a win, their equal longest losing streak in their history. But, you know, that's just a great win for Fiji. And Caleb Muntz there taking them out. I mean, Fiji were down to 13 at one stage. Semi Radradja had a 20-minute red card.
Yes, but it was a very different Fiji side from the one that lost heavily to Scotland, because it was in the international window now, so they had all their top players, and yeah, it was no surprise to me that they took out Wales. The positive news for Wales is that Blair Murray, their debutant from Canterbury, scored a try on debut. Now, he was a bronze boot medalist for the Trans-Tasman Schools International only 5 years ago, and I thought he was a premature departee from New Zealand rugby because he was already playing for Canterbury and probably on the verge of the Crusaders, but he's gone over there like Tane Plumtree, and he's now an international rugby player and scoring on debuts on the wing. So that's good for him. I noticed that Thomas Williams and Gareth Anscombe were in the halves. Anscombe's had his injury issues. He's now 33, 34. So Gatland's probably still unsure of exactly his best lineup there, and he seems to be mixing and matching, and it's not really working at the moment, and there's no real respite in sight for him.
Well, New Zealand players, yeah, Blair Murray, I mean, he scored 7 tries for Canterbury last year. So he is a prolific try scorer. The former Hamilton Old Boys player, Tom Jordan, made his second appearance for Scotland at fullback as well against South Africa. He's qualified on residency grounds, Murray through his mother, who's Welsh-born. Look, another huge weekend of rugby coming up with Ireland taking on Argentina on Saturday morning. Paul Williams will have the whistle for that one. Then on Sunday morning, Scotland play Portugal. England take on South Africa. Doesn't get any easier for England. And France play New Zealand. I think that's at 9:10 a.m. And on Monday it is Italy versus Georgia and Wales against Argentina. Campbell, you've mentioned the Wallabies for the second leg of the Grand Slam. Can the All Blacks take out France?
Well, they can. I'm much more confident about saying that than I was, say, last week, where they really struggled to squeak past England. But I think if they can get all their cavalry back, and if Sam Kane is fit, and they play Tuipulotu at lock, I think there's every chance, because we don't really know where France is at. That they don't strike me as the same imposing side that Ireland has been in the last couple of years. So, we know the threats. We know it's a big pack. We know Dupont, and there's a couple of wingers out wide with a bit of X factor and pace. But the All Blacks should be, if they get anything close to their Ireland performance, can put a lot of pressure on, and if they kick their goals, there's every show that they could win that, and on that basis they'll go through unbeaten for their tour, because I can't see them losing to Italy in the final game.
No, that's right. It's a huge game, really. Look, three greats of sevens rugby retired in unison last week. Scott Curry, Tim Mickelson and Sam Dixon. They did it all over a long period of time, other than win an Olympic gold medal. Although I think I'm right in saying all three were in the silver medal winning team in Tokyo in 2021. These guys have been the standard setters for sevens for a very long time, Campbell.
Oh, yeah, and look, I mean, Tim Mickelson, I think he first played for them back in about 2007 under Gordon Titchens, and he's a player, you know, he'd walk down the street and you wouldn't notice him, but then he gets a ball in his hand and he just does the right thing at the right time in sevens. Big engine, big work rate, and low error rate, and that was the same with Dixon and Curry. Both of those guys were very strong in the air as well, and at the collisions, which are very important areas of sevens. So that's tough, losing three players like that all at once for that All Black sevens side. So there's going to be some major rebuilding this season under Tomasi Thama, but those guys have been central to what have been some very good All Black sevens side over the last few years, without ever hitting quite the same heights as their Black Ferns sevens counterparts.
Yeah, look, the Super Rugby teams, I think they're going to be announced this week, so we'll deal with them next week. I just want to finish on an oddity. This morning in the New Zealand 15 game, it's the first time I've ever seen it that two tries were ruled out after they had been converted. Is that... That's quite a stretch, that's highly unusual,
although it did. There was previously the ruling that once the conversion had been taken, that was it, but I think they obviously it. With the TMO becoming more and more prominent, particularly at international level, they decided to shelve that. So we saw two tries, as you say. The decision's reversed. I think, was it Jordan Way, the Australian referee this morning?
That's right. It was Jordan
Way. Yeah. And his TMO or match official team there. So that's highly unusual. It's not something I really want to see a lot of, because you'd think if the TMO had access to the original vision, he can make a fast ruling on that in time prior to the conversion being taken. But yeah, so it's not. Otherwise, we're looking at 2-hour games again, and that was completely against what world rugby was wanting. So, yeah, interesting that there were two in the one game, though, that I certainly haven't seen that before.
Yeah, that's right. What you're saying, though, I mean, he should have been able to alert the referee to that there's something there that I want to have a look at, and they could have stopped the conversion and moved on from there. Well, that's all we've got time for this week. Another massive weekend of rugby come up. The All Blacks versus France is just a mouth-watering prospect. On behalf of Campbell Burns, Rugby News magazine editor, the hard-working Rugby News magazine editor, I'm Grant Harding. Catch you next week.